why can a property be mispriced? What happens out in the world? Isn't everything just mortally, brutally expensive? Well, it kind of is, but equally, there are opportunities to get a mispriced asset. And of course, when you can find a mispriced asset, obviously the turnaround time to make money is quicker. Welcome to the Urban Property Investor. I'm your host, Sam Saggers, here to help you crack the code of real estate wealth. Today's show, let's find mispriced assets in the real estate marketplace. Does that sound riveting? I hope so. Welcome back, regulars. Play the show in double speed. If it's your first time tuning in, all the episodes I've done are lessons on real estate. Because it's the first time you're hearing my voice, maybe play me in normal speed. But when you get to know me, speed me up, because my episodes tend to go for a long time. But today, I'm determined to finish the show in 38 minutes. Do you have 38 minutes you can spare for me? Probably not. That's why you've got to speed me up. But hey, we're going to talk about finding a real estate deal. I recently basically revalued a property. I bought it 3 years ago. Bought it for $695, new valuation $920. How did I get that new valuation? Well, it goes back to how I bought the property. Buying is a big part of the puzzle when it comes to real estate investment. And quite often there are properties out in the marketplace which are mispriced. They could have been sold for more, but they weren't. And really, when I analyzed the property which I just got revalued, it all came back to the way I bought that property. It was a mispriced asset in the marketplace at the point of sale. Now, quite often as a property investor, we don't realize that there are bargains to be had. And I think we all love a good bargain. Who doesn't love a bargain? I think it's an important part of the puzzle when it comes to being a property investor is to work out the buying process. Now, of course, there's some universal truths when it comes to finding a bargain. And I think the first universal truth is the consensus of the value of real estate is generally already in the price. So if something's too good to be true, it probably is. And really, when it comes to the fundamentals of real estate, I would prefer to overpay for real estate if it was full of awesome fundamentals. Great emerging community, close to a CBD, near beaches, near schools, shopping center, transport. All of that is something which I think is ultimately very important for a property investor, way more important than nabbing a bargain from the get-go on the wrong piece of real estate. But of course, as you guys all know, I teach the 4X growth plan. It's a simple plan: buy well, good location, great market, and find some differentiators on the real estate which will add value to the property over time. And when I analyzed the property which I just revalued, well, simply put, I bought it very, very well. I used the 4X growth plan, and at the point of purchase, the price I got was stacked with value, and there was really a price mismatch at the point of purchase, which has gone on to allow me to recycle essentially equity out of the property by getting a new valuation over a 3-year period of time. And of course, when it comes to real estate, I think we need to understand there's always going to be a bargain in a weird, volatile place. Getting a bargain in a great pocket of our cities is a hard thing to do. That's why understanding price mismatching is a very important tool. Remember, in our portfolio, we want great locations. We want areas close to employment, areas close to transport. We want quality real estate. We want good shops, schools. We want movement in our real estate. And I'm a big believer in pie. Wherever the population is growing, infrastructure is growing, and employment is growing at a macro level is a great place to get into. But of course, there are plenty of price mismatches on basically lemons in the market. Now, I've taught this before, market lemon theory. It's an important theory of real estate. Most of the market really doesn't know how to differentiate between what is considered a good property and what is considered to be a market lemon. Because most people don't really know what a bad property is, people who make properties make bad properties because the overall marketplace is used to accepting bad properties. And when you think about all of the problems in real estate you've seen over the years, from issues with strata properties and properties that are full of asbestos and all sorts of drama, really they were all produced as market lemons. And the consumer of today doesn't really know how to go, well, is that a market lemon or is that not a market lemon? Is that an outstanding property? Taking it a step further, we want to avoid the market lemons. We want outstanding property. But even if we took it a step further, can we find an outstanding property that has a price mismatch that is essentially underpriced? Well, absolutely we can, but we need to create some rules of engagement. So I want to sort of talk to you about how I buy real estate, and I want to start with what I don't buy. I don't buy real estate and look for a price mismatch in a declining market because effectively the market's going to go backwards. I don't buy real estate at the peak of a marketplace. I have been caught by that in the past. I've got the lashes on the back with buying at a market peak. And certainly the first property I bought arguably was at its market peak. And I soon learned that you're going to have a pretty tough period of time thereafter if you jump in too late to the real estate marketplace. I don't buy in highly volatile marketplaces, your quintessential scary, small communities with single industries. It's not my vibe. I don't buy real estate as the market maker. I don't try and make something up that has never been proven or there's any evidence behind it working in the past before. So I don't get involved with that. And if I found a price mismatch on something where you were being asked to be the first mover into a market, I'd probably not get involved in that type of real estate personally. I don't buy real estate where the long-term vacancy rate is over 3%. I know that I can't replace my income if the long-term trend is that that marketplace is very, very volatile. So I'll study a 15-year period of basically yield performance of a suburb. And if I see that there's years and years and years of underperformance, I don't look at that as an advantage. I look at that as a con. And again, I'm in the business of replacing my income from my rents. So I don't look at those type of properties for a price mismatch. Remember that the reason why there's price mismatches on bad properties is simply they are bad properties. And so I don't buy fads. I don't buy student accommodation. I don't buy in big city CBDs. I don't buy properties with poor long-term historical capital growth, with socioeconomic areas or in high crime areas. That's just my choice. I know other people, other podcasters get involved in that space. It's just not my vibe. I'd rather go to a quality community and find a price mismatch and avoid things like mining towns, holiday tourist towns, real old style renovations, areas where there's basically, social disorder. I avoid rural towns and I avoid CBD center, high density real estate in our major cities. I completely avoid that space. So why Can a property be mispriced? What happens out in the world? Isn't everything just mortally, brutally expensive? Well, it kind of is, but equally, there are opportunities to get a mispriced asset. And of course, when you can find a mispriced asset, obviously the turnaround time to make money is quicker. But certainly the first thing that misprices assets is market conditions. And you can study markets. They tend to these days be reported on monthly. And again, you can just have 12 months to a year and two of the months are very, very soft. And those market conditions allow for you as a buyer to have the upper hand against the seller. And again, that just is a very temporary mispricing in the cycle of the year. And by way of explanation, you know, you could be looking in a suburb and, you know, only every month five properties come on to market. The month you look or by studying the market, you see there's 15 properties come to market that month. You know there's a mispricing opportunity because of really everything coming to market during that 1 month period. And then it goes back to a norm. That is a market condition opportunity to create a mispricing. Obviously, there are other things that allow properties to be mispriced. Property is a human sport, and really there's a buyer and a seller. And quite often the seller can also misprice their asset. They can, get bad information or have a lack of information from a professional, which means their real estate goes to market at a far more affordable rate than it should. And again, that's what professional property investors look out for. Basically, a seller which has a mispriced asset. And quite often you'll see agents can be quite predatory to investors. Investor might own a property. They may be from a different state where they own the property, and a real estate agent will find out they're an interstate investor and prey on that a bit. Basically give them intel that the market is going to fall and prey on really a individual who's basically bought a property to hold and convince them to sell. And you get this lack of information being transferred to the seller, and the seller ends up selling quite often at a bargain rate for the marketplace. So I always say to people who own real estate, be very, very careful of the local real estate community, because they have targets to hit and you are the target. And so just be very, very mindful. If you've ever bought interstate, be very, very careful of real estate agents giving you a call and, effectively trying to get you to sell because of market conditions. Quite often they're dreaming up information about nothing. Now, I had this about 3 years ago with one of my clients, and she rang me and sort of, I think she got information at the time that the Brisbane market was going to be oversupplied with real estate. And the local agent, she was pretty adamant that he was doing the right thing by her. He wanted her to sell. He was giving her a good price on their resale fees. And I said to her, like, this is just poppycock. You are just getting basically screwed here. Like, at what report on earth has the market being oversupplied? Like, show me a report. And I had to go back to the basics. And what she had received from that agent was some pretty crummy, like, Google articles written by 12-year-olds about nothing. Went back to real data from real credible research houses, got her to eventually hold the real estate. But she would have sold that at a mispriced point if I didn't step in and intervene. That stuff happens all the time. So it's kind of two lessons. If you're listening and you own real estate, don't fall for that. But if you're a buyer, quite often understanding who the seller is and their motivations is one of the best ways to find a mispriced asset. Obviously, economic factors also misprice assets. You can see in low rate environments, asset values tend to go up. In high rate environments, asset values tend to stagnate. So economically speaking, probably the best time to buy is when the rates are at their highest point, because it does offer effective mispricing against the average cost to borrow money. And again, where we're at the point right now is a very high interest rate compared to an average interest rate. So arguably, there should be some mispriced properties in the market today. Obviously, property condition can create a mispriced opportunity. Quite often, not necessarily for the benefit of a buyer, but actually for the detriment to a buyer. Quite often, a poorly maintained property can look cheap on the surface, but one of the biggest mistakes property investors make in real estate is not assuming capital improvement costs, not factoring them in, the necessary repairs. And that can lead to what is perceived to be a mispriced asset. Again, sort of goes back to market lemon theory. We don't want these problems in our life. As a property investor, we just emotionally want real estate which is effortless. And anything that requires effort, I'm not interested in it, busy enough as I am. So again, you can get mispricing in location, the perception of a location versus the reality of what that location has on offer. I'm probably very adept at going, well, that's a mispriced, underpriced location. It's a great street. It's got a park. Its future is better than its past. And, seeing the value in what is effectively a mispriced piece of real estate. And really, probably the main reason things are mispriced is really an inaccurate form of valuation. Really, real estate agents not pricing the property correctly, underpricing it because they want a quick sale. Sellers, developers really mispricing real estate based on the wrong method of valuation, outdated, inaccurate data, pricing for, that they've put together 18 months ago and taking something to market today. It happens a lot in the industry. And really, the property I recently bought and got revalued, that was a brand new property. It effectively was priced well before it went to market, and it went to market too cheap for what it was, the quality of what it was. So obviously, local trends can also lead to really what I refer to as mispricing. You can have a neighborhood which is really an up-and-comer, a diamond in the rough, and again, it should be selling for more than what it is, but it just simply hasn't been noticed. Sometimes areas are full of localized amenities. You can get changes in the value of school zones. You can get schools which are up and coming on the school list of high performers. And again, it significantly impacts property prices eventually. And what you're looking for is to be that early stage investor which gets the price mismatch. Obviously, some areas can be rezoned, which allows for a pricing mismatch. Some places can be saturated with development, which again can squash prices. So I'm a big believer in finding out in the world that there is opportunity aplenty. And again, it could be the vendor's motivation, the vendor's financial situation, the vendor's emotional situation at the time, their lack of knowledge, or the agent actually just really doing a number on them. Or even one of the best ways to find mispriced real estate is quite often investors selling with tenants. Like owner occupiers aren't gravitating to the asset because when they go in there, the tenant is painful. The real estate agent, you know, finds it hard to get access. And it just creates this opportunity to buy something which is completely underpriced. And again, another tip, if you are a seller of real estate, you know, I recommend never having a tenant in at the point of sale. They really just create a mispricing opportunity for the next person to win. And that's okay if you're a buyer, but less fun if you're a seller. So what do I like to buy? Well, I'm glad you asked. What a great question. I love to buy property with a lot of built-in value. And I find value is, you know, a little hard at times to understand what is true value for people. But I've kind of sort of narrowed down where I find value in real estate. I like to buy properties which are in marketplaces which are really due to have a bit of a rise in value. They may have even underperformed against the last few years of their aggregate demand. In other words, suburbs where perhaps prices over the last few years have increased at a slower rate than their long-term average. I think that can really create a mispriced opportunity to find gold in the marketplace. Obviously, I love to buy real estate where the long-term trend of rents and vacancy rates is much lower than 3%, closer to 2%, even 1%. One of the last properties I bought, the average vacancy rate over the last 12 years was around 1.5%. That means the landlord is in charge every single year. And of course, that means rents are typically going up because the landlord is in charge. And when I look at that asset's rental performance against other suburbs of the same city, it's almost getting double the rent based on that principle of mispricing alone. And of course, I like real estate which is fairly consistent with its sort of capital growth profile. And again, maybe it's just going through a sad period, but it's not a long-term trend. And really, I'm looking for that market mismatch when I'm buying. And really, when I like properties which have mispricing add value to it. And when I look for mispricing add value, it's mispriced design-led real estate. And really, the property which I just got revalued at 920, that was a highly designed property. In fact, it was so nice that it should never have been sold for what it was, mispriced design. Design comes at a cost. And again, I think it's one of the best ways to find value. You can find value in mispriced spaces. Sometimes, things are just, you know, undervalued based around the size of a dwelling. I love properties that have a lot of built-in value, and real estate with a mispriced perception of short-term local aggregate demand. I love that. Something that's not quite right at the point of sale. And it means that there's a willing seller and you're a willing buyer, and it's very short-term in its nature. It's not a long-term disease of the marketplace or the property. What it does, it allows you to buy well at the point of sale. Mispriced square meter rate, I think it's a really, really good one in new construction. It happens all the time. You can find absolute nuggets when it comes to that. A developer, by way of example, may have land banked a property for 20 years. They then go to market. They're much cheaper than their competitors who bought a site 6 months ago using mezzanine funding. It's a real mispricing in the local market based on a square meter rate consensus. Again, it can mean you can buy real estate really, really well. I love, again, mispricing through early stage transformation. Areas go through change, and really you can have an area which is an ugly duckling. It's completely mispriced. It's way better than what it is, and it allows you as a property investor to jump on something which has got a bright future. I love mispriced land. Land with housing on it or without housing on it can quite often just be undervalued. And if you can find it, obviously it's what I like to buy. And I also love to buy mispriced free space. Places where there's a great park across the street or there's no price put on the beautiful ability for someone to walk down to the nature reserve or to the blue space down the street. Quite often, for example, it's not the waterfront real estate, it's the real estate one street back from the waterfront, which is really the mispriced asset. And again, I own real estate following that same principle. One street in front is double the price, is actually going one street back, actually a mispricing. And I find a lot of value in real estate doing it that way. I'll also look for mispricing in, and I probably said mispricing 45 times on this episode already. Are you guys sick of me saying mispricing? I'm going to shut up about that word, I think. But I tell you what, I always find undervalued real estate when I shop for irreplaceable assets. And I think sometimes property investors, again, don't have a high skill set around what is irreplaceable design. And irreplaceable design and assets is really a term which is used to describe a property with really unique features. And that's why in my 4X growth plan, I've got deal growth, market growth, location growth, and really emotional growth from real estate. It's these unique features and qualities that can be attached to real estate that create this kind of irreplaceable asset concept. And there's that word again, you can often get a mispricing on them. And so the term irreplaceable asset is often used in real estate to describe unique features and qualities of a property which are extremely difficult, if not impossible, to replicate or replace with a similar older property through renovation. And quite often, there are some good mispriced assets through renovation, like in other words, you can buy them really well, renovate them and get an uplift. But equally, there are some irreplaceable assets which, again, the design standards are just so high that you could never find a secondhand property and effectively pay for a renovation to meet that level of market design. It's impossible, impossible. And recently, I guess I just put on our private Facebook group a video of me showing an irreplaceable asset up in Brisbane. The client I helped buy at 780, and within 12 months, the new valuation is 1.1. So a huge uplift, all because it's beyond renovation. It's a mispriced asset, a mispriced property. Obviously, I think, you know, you can get underpricing from the neighborhood effect and the halo effect. I'm a big believer in buying real estate where the neighbors want to stay. They won't sell. But more people want to come to a suburb. The neighborhood effect is effectively neighbors don't want to leave. The halo effect is effectively more people want to come to the suburb. And if you can get that right and you can find an area which is going through that change, you're going to start to make money. It's really identifying, hang on a minute, that area is going to improve. So the neighborhood people who live there will want to stay longer. That means they won't sell their house that often. That means you'll get capital growth. And because that area is going to change and gentrify, more people are going to come to that suburb. And that's going to be a mispriced suburb or mispriced street. So I'm a big believer in that. I look for that kind of stuff all day, every day. And, you know, that's a major part of how I end up kind of making money. But of course, you can drill into a market, a mispriced marketplace through effectively understanding aggregate market performance. You can go and say, well, by way of example, you know, there has been a lack of growth in a marketplace for a period of time, which is not normal to its long-term average. So effectively, we are underpriced at this point of the cycle for that asset type in that marketplace. That is market mispricing. Then we can go to location mispricing and go, well, the location is better than what it should be. If a new piece of infrastructure comes to that location, will it move the needle? Will it be the agent of change? And by buying now, are we actually getting a better price than what the future has in store? And of course, then you can drill into even like a street. You can look at, for example, you know, a street's character. Is it improving? Are there a lot of knockdown rebuilds? Are there a lot of renovations? If a street is going through transformation and you can still buy at the untransformated price, I don't even know that's a word, untransformated, pre-change price, you're going to find a mispriced street. And so these are some of the things I think are really, really important when it comes to deal growth inside of real estate. And I always describe it as other people's money, other people's time, other people's designs, or other people's relationships. Now, you can go to a street and you can see, well, half the street's going through renovation, knockdown, rebuild. That's other people's money they're putting into that street to make the street better. I'm going to use other people's money to get a mispricing on an asset in that street. Other people's designs. You can go, okay, well, again, this is an irreplaceable asset. I couldn't renovate to this standard of renovation. It would be practically impossible to get an architect, a designer, a landscape artist that is this world class on that particular asset. So I'm going to use other people's designs to make money, to find a mispricing. And really, the property I bought, which I just revalued, really had a lot of other people's designs that made it stand out as a property which has gone on to prove that it can be a bit of a money maker. So obviously you need to buy from someone if you are looking for a mispriced or underpriced piece of real estate. Who do I like to buy from when I'm shopping for a mispriced asset? Well, brand new real estate agents are a good one. Quite often they're cutting their teeth and a bit nervous, and maybe they're not the proven, money maker in a neighborhood. Great real estate agents make vendors a lot of money. Great real estate agents know how to jack prices all the time. And again, they jack it on the buyer, and you know, it's very difficult to find an underpriced property off a brilliant, world-class real estate agent. It's less of a problem when someone's new to the industry. I think it's good to buy from those selling property in an area that is not their primary focus. That happens all the time. It could be a new development. It could be a real estate agent. Could be a vendor. You know, they're not in their primary zone, and they're selling out of area. And as such, they often just don't get the right information to pass on the right price, and they misprice their assets. I think obviously highly motivated vendors. There are vendors that sell for all sorts of reasons: distress, the bank, divorce, death. Distress vendors really are a great way to go out and shop and find a mispriced asset. I love also experienced design-led developers. Sometimes just some of the best in the business, world-class, absolutely bring irreplaceable assets to market, and because of market conditions, often can't get a premium for the product, even though the product could demand a premium in better days. And again, it allows you to control something which is just incredible and buy it at an undervalued point of the cycle. And I'm also a big believer in buying from the best community land developers. I think quite often they also create opportunities to buy undervalue early in the gentrification cycle, because they know they're going to release real estate at a much higher point later in the cycle. So again, they create this early stage mispricing just to get things operational on their communities that they're transforming. So there's a few ways to play the game. And yes, I'm ending the episode early this week because I do have a sneaky little meeting to get to. But I tell you what, I think we cracked some codes there. I hope you thought so as well. So if you did, you're more than welcome to leave a review and let me know what you think of the show. But hey, folks, that's it from me this week. I'll catch you next week as we talk more real estate. Thanks for tuning in to The Urban Property Investor. To never miss an episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app or on YouTube. And I would love it if you could give the show a rating and share it with your friends and family. In between episodes, you can always keep in touch with me by connecting on social media over Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Until we meet again on the next episode of The Urban Property Investor, take care and bye for now.